Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of All by the Popcorn. I'm Emily.
And I'm Alessandra.
And today, we are talking about the last Best Motion Picture nominee for the 2024 Oscars. And that is The Zone of Interest.
It is actually the last one.
It is actually the last one.
I did not know that this was nominated for Best Picture. Like, it just flew through my brain. And so I'm really glad it was, because it was a very unique and well-crafted and incredibly horrific kind of movie. Very profound in its own way.
Yeah, is it just me, or does the poster remind you of the Parasite poster for some reason?
It's a coloring. I mean, honestly, I would say that in this movie, the color correction and like palette was very like blues, greens, not like it's super saturated or anything like that. So it was just kind of like cloudy day-esque vibes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but then also kind of like so
bright
at some points that it was definitely just blinding a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. It was very, this movie was so off-putting. It was weirdly beautiful and horrible at the same time.
It's haunting. It's haunting. And so I don't haunting. Know if, did you know the concept of this movie before you watched it? Like, did you have any idea?
Absolutely not.
Oh, so you didn't even, okay, so unfortunately I could not stay away from talking, like people talking about this. So like, I kind of knew what the vibe was already. But
the only indication I got to anything was that I was telling Casey that I was starting this movie. And they're like, isn't that a horror movie? And I was like, I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, it is. It is a horror movie.
It is.
Yeah.
It is a horror film.
Yeah. And actually, I thought it would be really nice if I read this featured review that's on IMDb. I thought it was a user review. And I read it and I was like, this is actually a really concise and wonderful way of describing this movie, because it's quite complex. So I'm gonna read it. It's called The Human Side of a Monster. They gave it 9 out of 10 stars by Lomax 343. He says, this is one of the most unsettling films I've seen in a long time. Rudolf Hess was the commandant of Auschwitz and oversaw the murder of around 3 million people. At the same time, he was a devoted family man who lived with his wife and children in a large house just outside the camp. The camp itself is hinted at, but not seen. Instead, we see Hess taking his children out on picnics, boating trips, and horse rides. His wife and her mother talk about how wonderful the garden is, oblivious to the sound of gunshots and columns of smoke rising from the crematoria just beyond the garden wall. Christian Fredel's Hess is nothing like Ralph Fiennes' Amon Göth in Schindler's List. The latter radiated sadistic evil. The former is terrifyingly normal. He sees the running of a concentration camp as a job and nothing more. A series of practical problems to overcome through hard work and organization. The Hess children seem terrifyingly well-adjusted as well. The worst that can be said of any of them is that one boy can be mean to his younger brother. There is no real plot. The only significant events are the Hess's wife becoming upset because her husband's transfer might lead her to losing her idyllic house and idyllic lifestyle, and Hess' later reappointment to Auschwitz. Thanks to that nice Google, I can reveal that these events took place in November 43 and May 44. The film ends shortly afterwards. We see nothing of Hess's trial or execution, just a family man with an odd haircut. It's easy, all too easy probably, to regard Hess and his ilk as one-dimensional villains. Evil in the way that Bond villains are evil or Darth Vader is evil. Nothing to do with us at all. The Hess we see here is like us. He can oversee the deaths of thousands of people during the day and off screen, then come home to read bedtime stories. Nor are Hess and his family ilk firmly in the past. For all I know, there are Israeli politicians and leaders of Hamas who think nothing of bombing their perceived enemies, yet who love their children and are loved in return. Towards the end of the film, there's a scene shot in the Auschwitz of today. But even here, expectations are defied. We see the early morning cleaning shift arrive before it's open to visitors. It is a place of horror, but there is still a need to sweep the floors and clean the windows. Why? It's a very human contradiction. The message of the film is simple but profound and also terrifying. We're ordinary people, but so is Hess, at least on one level. The thing we call civilization is wafer-thin veneer. If we don't look after it, we'll lose it. That's it.
Wow. Wow. That was a very good review. Very good user review.
Yeah, we traditionally do not read them, and I wanted to just see what other people thought of this, and it basically summed up exactly how I felt about watching it. I mean, some of the more horrifying parts is hearing the screaming and the, like, trains coming in and people getting separated and people getting shot, and you hear it so much in this movie that it's, like, commonplace for these people who just kind of don't even hear it at all, it seems.
Yeah, it definitely seems like some of them, like maybe there was a scene where I think the youngest boy was like playing with toys in his room. And yeah. I think he was hearing something and was, you know, curious about what the sound was. But yeah, everyone else definitely seems to be just like in their own little world, in their own little paradise, especially the mom. Yeah. With this just beautiful garden and house that she has that just has these high walls where you can't see anything outside of them and know what horrible things are happening just on the other side of the wall. And yeah. It was really cool kind of how the movie, I guess, unraveled. Like, the movie starts and you're kind of seeing people do their day-to-day stuff, you know, the maids are cleaning, they're shining shoes, they're doing whatever, they're serving breakfast. And then you kind of start to see the reality of a lot of it. Like, the maids are drinking because they know mm-hmm. that they're working for terrible
Nazis.
People.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Yes. And and the mother comes to visit, and she mm-hmm. leaves very suddenly without notice because she sees how horrible this all is.
And she's coughing because the crematorium is, like, right outside their window. And so, like, all right. of the like, dust and the ashes are, like, making this woman cough. And in the middle of the night, she can, like, see the red glow of it. And
yeah, through her window.
Yeah. And it seems that she has a moment of being, like, disgusted or just, like, she can't. It seems that way, but because of this, like, filming, it's like fly on the wall filming. So it's like as if there were, like, surveillance cameras in every room of the house.
Yeah, there weren't a whole bunch of close-up shots. They were they were all very, like, far away and, like, very, very spanning. Like, it made the area look very big for probably how small of an area this house, like, actually is. I mean, the camp's probably ginormous, but
yeah,
like, the house is just, like, a very small part of this, a very small Eden of this hellish area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even in the beginning, we see the family on, like, a little, like, outing, and they just seem like regular people. You know, like, at the lake, and they're driving back and they're walking through, like, this gorgeous woods, you know, dense woods. But that's before we, like, know who they are, you know?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. When the movie just starts with them hanging out at the lake, like in the grass, and they're just like all in their bathing suits, just hanging out in a very beautiful, serene area. And then, yeah, it really just starts to kind of slowly unravel, or like, you know, peel away, like what this house is actually covering up.
Yeah. Yeah. There's even that like kind of negative film part where it's kind of like
the girl with the apples.
Yes, like a humming, and then there's a girl, and at first we see her when the little girl can't fall asleep. And it's kind of like goes into a negative film, and this woman is like very bright white because it's black, and like it's very strange to see. And we see her again later in the movie with the little girl who can't sleep as well, with this kind of foreboding music, and the girl is putting apples in the trenches. She's putting apples like in between all of the workers' tools so that they can pick up
eat.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's
she's hiding food for the prisoners to eat. Because they're probably not.
They're most not, definitely being, not fed. Being fed.
Yeah, and most definitely not being fed.
Yeah, and then later, and she finds like the little tin that has. I think this was like truly the height of the movie for me, and also the most emotional part. This woman rides back home. We find out that she's just one of the maids, one of the Polish maids that lives nearby, and she takes this folded up paper that turns out it has a piano like notes on it and lyrics, and she plays the song on the piano, and it's just this really, really sad, beautiful song that is just lyrics are like really, really touching and like sad, just like we love God and hope that we can make it out of here, and it's just like the one of the saddest parts of the movie, because it's directly the only time where we even hear, you know, any of the people in Auschwitz, any of the Jews stuck in there, like just have any kind of voice that isn't screaming or begging or, you know, being shot. Like it's the only time when we hear that. And so it's just like, for me, it was a really powerful time in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. The negative part was really messing me up, because I was trying to figure out like who it was, or if we knew who this person was, or if it was just some random person sneaking in to the camp.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Also, there's that part where the dad took his son and daughter out on the boat that he got, and they go down, they're just playing in the water, and the dad finds like something in the water. And he's
I was trying to figure out what he picked up. Was it like a bone or something?
I think it was like a bone. Yeah, I think it was some kind of remnant of a person. And he was like, oh shit, like they are dumping the ashes in this river. And he's like, kids, get out of the river like right now. But then it's pouring rain and he has to get his boat back. So they all have to like go up the river, and he has to just go through all of this human ash slush. And his kids do, and they get home and they have to be just like rinsed off. It's like, it's just so horrific. And it's just, you know, this guy's just like, oh, oops, got to get my kids back home. They just got a little bit of people on them. It's crazy.
You know, just an obstacle of the job.
Yeah.
They were like cleaning out of their hair and like out of like off of their skin.
Yeah. Yeah. And the girl has to like clean it up a little bit. I mean, it's just like ash everywhere. It's horrible. It's like, you know, a volcano ash or something, but it's people.
And this house was so clean. Mm-hmm. It was unsettling. So
German, I think. I mean, and the Germanness of this was very clear. Like they're very, very strict, and like they always follow rules. It's like, there's certain times for things. There's certain ways things are done. Everything is, you know, meticulously categorized and numbered. It's just, it's
I mean, terrific. And with the military aspect of it as well. It's also just on top of that. Just 10 times.
Yeah.
10 times more strict than that.
pretty horrific. I think we don't see a lot. Like, I really like that review because not that we need movies like this, but like, in a sense, we don't see a lot of movies from the perspective of like a real family, like a real Nazi family, like what it was like for them to be, they were poor, as the mom alluded to, like she was just a cleaner and they came from so low and then they just jumped on the bandwagon and joined the Reich and like became, you know, commandant, and like they're coming from a place of being so poor that they were like so happy that they could go like get to be high enough to have their own country home that they've always wanted, you know. And it's just like you really see how somebody would do this. Like, you see how that would be appealing if you already hate Jews to do this, you know.
Yeah, I mean, or if you're just, you know, poor and desperate for money.
Exactly.
Or any other reason, any other horrible reason to do this, to think this way and to support someone this horrible. It's, but my only fear with this movie, and I know it doesn't, because there's some smart people out there. I don't want this to in any way humanize these people.
Because
they're not. They're not human. They are literal monsters.
Yeah, they are. Doing
devils,
average demons. Things. Right? Like,
yes.
But I think it's because it's all rooted in the hatred that they have for others and Jews. And it's
very strong. Very strong.
Extremely
strong.
And they talk about it in the beginning of the movie, too. Like, they kind of, you know, they're always talking about very racist, saying very horrible things about Jews to each other while the Polish maids are around. Who, you know, they could be Jews themselves, but I don't think they are. They're just around. They're around it. And so, like, it's like they are just so normal about it, but it is because it's rooted in hate. And it's also because, like, that's what the propaganda and that's what their entire upbringing. And, like, it's been forced into this. This is hatred is, like, good for you kind of thing, right? Like, you're seeing that is the basis of, and like, fear and hate is like the basis of this regime. So like, that's how they get people
to motivate you to have us win, to have us succeed in this war that is happening.
And you can imagine that even the people who don't actually hate Jews are like forced to. It's like they're like brainwashed to, and then, or they're just, you know, the sons or the kids of these people, right? Or they're just you're not born with hate in your heart. You're taught to hate. So like, you thinking about that kind of thinking is a lot of what this movie, like, you're sitting there watching these people and you have to like come to terms with all of this, like the hatred that these people have. Like, it's taught to them, right? Like, you think about it, it's a lot of like sitting and thinking and contemplating about it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a pretty good movie. So the director, Jonathan Glazer, I've actually seen one of his other movies. And I saw it about 10 years ago. It was called Under the Skin. It had Scarlett Johansson in it. And that movie was, and as soon as I saw that he made this movie, I was like, oh my God, that movie is similar in the vibe that he doesn't show you everything. You don't know what's happening. So it's like Scarlett Johansson is this character and you're just following her around like Scotland and England. And she like travels and goes from place to place and things are happening there. But you're like, what is exactly happening? It's so vague. And then by the end, you figure out who she is. And I don't want to spoil it, but it's like really creepy and haunting. And it has this similar vibe of like, you're only seeing the in-betweens. You're not seeing like you're not seeing the full scope of somebody.
Yeah, and this kind of situation is so, this historical event is so perfect for this type of directing, for this type of editing and writing, because this is such a well-known historical event.
Mm-hmm.
Very horrible historical event that everyone is aware of. Yeah. Everyone knows. It is in our history books. Everyone learns about it. And so it's not vague. Like, you know exactly what's mm-hmm. happening. It takes a minute because you have to kind of infer things, but it's just so, you know, the second you hear Auschwitz, oh, everyone knows what that place is.
Yeah.
And even if you don't quite know who the actual historical figures are, if you're not, you know, super knowledgeable of that, but like, you definitely know of this place. And so it just makes it that much more powerful that even with showing, you know, kind of random people, random looking, like normal looking people doing whatever,
mm-hmm.
normal looking military people doing whatever they're doing, and still know what historical event is happening in the background is extremely powerful.
Yeah. And I think that if you didn't know what was going on, I mean, you kind of get the idea that these people, like, eventually you figure out these people live in a place where just on the other side of the wall are people being shot, people being horrifically murdered, being, you know, denied things and stuff like that. So you can hear it in the sound. And that is a real marvel of the sound editing, that I hope it was nominated for sound, because it is, like, so important to this movie, the sound. Like, without it, it needs it so much, you know? Oh, yeah, it's nominated for Best Sound.
The sound was almost kind of, I don't know if there was something else, like maybe Casey had their sound machine on or something, or maybe there was just another noise happening, but I mm-hmm. felt like some of the movie was very silent, and then some yeah. parts were very loud.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it was, it, I was like, what is happening? I was like, I know it's not my TV or my speaker, because it's like, it's, but there were just, it just seemed kind of all over the place, which again made it unsettling as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting choice in the sound.
Yeah, there seemed to be, along with the, you know, screams in some parts, there was a lot of, like, low frequency noise that kind of just pervaded the whole movie, and was mm-hmm. louder at certain times, especially when the, like, crematorium was on and stuff like that. Like, you could hear the kind of, like, ooh, you know, like,
yeah,
it was foreboding. Yeah. It was just this kind of bass that just kept you on your toes, like, you don't know what's going to happen next. And sometimes there was some music that was just kind of, and then that's what the movie started with as well, with, like, this kind of, like, heavy sound, heavy music.
Yeah. And those really long holds of, like, the very beginning, like right before the scene of the family by the lake,
mm-hmm.
there was that just, like, long just black screen.
Yeah.
Of just nothing, and you heard, and it held for, like, a solid, like, 3 minutes, it felt like.
Yeah, and with the title.
It just was, with the title, yeah, the title was, like, slowly fading away, mm-hmm. and then it was just black for a long time with, like, the sound, the scary music, and then I think birds eventually. And
yeah.
And then it finally started, and then we had, like, a red screen, like, just an all red screen a little bit
yeah.
later.
I forgot about that. So it really yeah. primes you for this horror.
Yes, for this horror film.
It, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like, this is the vibe exactly. you're getting into for the next 2 hours.
Are you comfy? You shouldn't be.
Maybe you should think about your choices here. So yeah, I mean, I'm really glad it was nominated for Best Film. It was nominated for Best Motion Picture of the Year, but also Best International Film, Best Sound, Best Achievement in Directing, and Best Adapted Screenplay, both for Jonathan Glazer.
Wow. So
I guess it was amazing. A book then, because, like, if it's adapted screenplay.
I'm guessing. But normally in the writers, it'll say, like, author, or, like, whoever was the author, right?
I mean, usually movies that are based off of real people don't count as adapted screenplay, right? Like,
well, that's very true.
Is that true? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. Okay, so I'm clicking on the other writer. Just adapted
off of history?
Yeah.
But yeah, but adapt it, it usually seems like it's adapted off of a written work.
Okay, yes. This is adapted from the novel by Martin Amis, who actually died last year. Okay, so Martin Amis is
listed here.
Oh. Yes, yes. Okay.
Normally, I thought it would say, like, Martin Amis and then, like, parentheses, like, written by. Like novel by or something.
Yeah.
Like, normally I thought there'd be that extra thing, but maybe not.
Hmm. Okay. Well, rest in peace, Martin Amis.
Yeah, and know that that you had something to do with this incredible movie that was made. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great acting by Christian Friedel and Sandra Hüller, of course. Sandra Hüller is like, again, did not know she was in this movie when we talked about Anatomy of a Fall. It's incredible that she's in two Best Picture nominated movies, like, as the lead in both of them.
Oh my gosh.
I mean,
amazing what? Year for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even know about this lady before, and it's just like, what a good year for her, for sure. I was going to look at some trivia, but do you want to take a break before that?
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, we are back. So, yes, this first trivia actually says, Sir Martin Amis, author of the source novel, died on May 19th, 2023, the same day the film had its world premiere at Cannes.
That's crazy. He couldn't even see the movie.
Well, maybe he saw it before he died.
That's true. Before it was, like, you know, fully premiered.
I'm going to read this second one because I actually was a little confused about it. Mrs. Okay. Huss describes her friends getting a coat from Canada while mocking another woman who thought she meant the sovereign country. Canada, with a K, was in fact the name given in Auschwitz to the vast storehouse of goods confiscated from the prisoners. That's horrific. Oh my god. Okay.
Oh. Like, all of the items. Yeah, because they talked about, like, auctions and things. Mm-hmm. Was that all the same? Like, they were auctioning off people's belongings?
Yeah, and I think, like, at the very beginning of the movie, she gets that fur coat. And, you know, sewn into it is, like, some gold or something. Or diamonds. And at one point, the kid is playing with teeth.
Yes.
Oh, God. Yep. It's just, oh, my God. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fourth one is really interesting if you want to read that.
One, two, three, four. The director one? Director?
Yes.
Director Jonathan Glazer?
I think it's just Glazer.
Glazer? Use up to 5 fixed cameras in the house and garden with no visible crew to capture many scenes, so the actors didn't know if they were being shot in a close-up or a wide shot. They were totally immersed in the scene and enjoyed working in that realistic environment. Wow. That's crazy.
Wow. That's amazing. Wow.
Oh, God, this is a long one. Oh, gosh. Yeah, Mandy Farewell.
I think that is too long.
No, we're not going to read that.
It does say that it's talking about that nighttime scene, and it says that she's in the dark, so they're using a thermal camera.
Okay, that's what I thought, because she was like brightly one color. So I was like, okay, so this must be negative as well as thermal. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Alexandria, the young Polish girl leaving apples for the starving prisoners, was 90 years old when she met Glazer and died shortly after. The bike the film uses and the dress the actress wears both belong to her.
Okay.
Oh.
That's...
Oh, my God.
That's really sad. God. Oh, my gosh. That's, like, so significant and sentimental and just heartbreaking.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Ugh. Here's a more positive one. The family dog in the film is played by Sandra Hüller's pet dog.
No wonder that dog loved her so much. I was like, why? I was like, this dog fucking loves Sandra.
Sandra.
Like, he didn't give, like, this dog didn't give a shit about the other, the other guy.
That's incredible. I
definitely
love
noticed
it.
That. I was like, this dog is not acting like a dog actor, an animal actor.
He did exactly what he thought he was doing, which was following his mom around everywhere.
Yeah, and being a bad boy. I saw him going up on the table and the picnic table with all the food on it.
Oh my God, yeah.
And her going, no, no,
no.
Oh my gosh, that's adorable.
Due to the unconventional multi-camera setup, Glazer and his team had over 800 hours of raw footage at the start of the editing process. Wow.
Oh my gosh.
I bet there was a lot of unscripted parts of this where they just... You know, we're like, okay, this is what's happening in the scene. Just you know, hang out with your family. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Yeah.
It's so realistic that the actors are just acting like they're a family. So, like, you could do anything. You talk or not talk or, you know. Sandra Hüller is just, like, showing the hate in her heart at every moment she can. She's really good at that. It's haunting.
Yeah, and the part where they're talking about going back to the spa in Italy.
Yeah, they're like laughing together. Like, they clearly like each other a lot, but then of course he has, you know, he goes into his office sometimes in the morning and has a prostitute come, and then like goes and cleans his junk in the sink, and then goes back home.
Yep. Yeah, in those crazy underground tunnels.
And you see them, like, walking, like, long shots, like, taking the whole time to, like, walk down the whole, like, aisle and stuff.
Yeah, like, the scene where he tells his wife that he's, that they're going to be transferred, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes down to the dock, and she walks the entire way over to him. And it's just, it was a very well shot scene. And she's like, you know, you have to go. You have to go. You're being transferred, not us. This is our home.
Yeah. It's just, especially at that point in the movie, you're like, how have you twisted this that you're getting so bunched up that living here is your ideal home? It's like, you're hearing people screaming.
People getting massacred. And this, you want to call this your home?
She clearly is in denial. Like, it's like so, it's so much denial that it's like actual, like, you know, what's the word? Like, just, it's like you're just believing something so much that you're just, it is your reality, you know? Like, you're delusional. You're completely delusional. That's the word I'm trying to think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this is exactly what you were talking about. Although the Hess family home was recreated for the film, the scene in the cellar takes place in the cellar that actually belonged to the real Hess family home.
Oh, great.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. You know, I really...
Filmed on location. Ugh.
I really did like the kind of when they had the present day Auschwitz scenes mirroring the aisles and hallways that Hess was walking down and kind of getting sick in seeing like all of the like cleaning crew just like sweeping and all of the, you know, thousands and thousands and millions of shoes and, like, you know, all the things that belong to all the people in the end of the movie, and then just Hess just kind of getting a little, I guess, a little sick from whatever he drank or something, or you're hoping it's, like, getting to him that he's a sadistic, you know, horrible human, you know?
I wasn't sure why he was coughing. I thought he was like, I didn't know. I was like, is someone poisoning you? Are you,
that's what I thought,
dying? Like, what is happening? But yeah, that scene where it was going back and forth was insane.
Ugh. So powerful.
Very powerful. I like these two because I was also a little interested about the title of the film, but I'm going to read this one. The director, this is the director's first non-English language film. And the title is an expression used by the Third Reich to refer to the 40 square kilometer area around Auschwitz. So the zone of interest.
Okay. Steven Spielberg called it the best Holocaust movie I've witnessed since My Own.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is some praise.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
No, I mean, there's a lot of trivia in here. So
yeah,
definitely come and see it. And I just wanted to note also that this movie does take place at the same time as Oppenheimer does, which is kind of interesting because they're so different.
Like the same years in history?
I mean, generally, you know, it's World War II. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Should I read these plot keywords?
Let's do it.
All right. We've got Holocaust, World War II, Auschwitz, Auschwitz concentration camp, and Nazi.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. This movie got a 92 Metascore. It's got 54 positive, 3 mixed, and 1 negative review with 1, 2, 3, 4,
really? 5,
10,
wow.
13, 40.
Oh my God. There's so many 100.
I'm counting them.
Sorry.
26, 27. 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37,
100s. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Whoa. It's all a lot. Right.
I scrolled all the way down to the bottom to the one negative.
Which is a 25, my God.
A 25 by the San Francisco Chronicle. Oh,
damn.
All right. Oh, we've seen Mick before. I've seen that name. Maybe Glazer's movie will be of use to people naive enough to believe that nobody without horns and a pitchfork can be the devil. Everybody else will learn nothing from this film. Okay. I mean, it...
Is that the point? Are you supposed to learn something?
No.
I don't think that's the point.
No. It's with all of the media or all the content that's been created about this historical event, it's always kind of told from the same perspective. This is a different perspective. And yeah, it's like I definitely had my concerns because I'm like, oh, I didn't like this because it kind of almost like humanized these monsters. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. like, but that's also just makes it that much more horrifying that, you know, a regular degular human could be the cause of so much death and horror and misery.
Yeah.
And it's, awfulness.
That's why it's so scary. You know, it's like, yeah, it's, you can totally still watch other Holocaust films from the perspective of the Jews because absolutely. And read books like Night by Elie Wiesel. And we should, and we do. Like, in school, we had to read Night. So I think it's a different perspective, but it's not even a perspective. It's just a different viewpoint. Yeah, viewpoint. Yeah, like, I don't know. Because obviously, it slightly humanizes them, but in, like, a way that's even more horrifying. So, like, yeah.
I guess the question here is, are you looking at this movie the way you should be looking at it? Or are you looking at it in the way that you're not supposed to be looking at it? As vague as that is, I'm right.
Okay, I'm going to read this 75 from Real Views. It says, this is one of the most effective depictions of Arendt's banality of evil that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And that's in large part due to the unconventional tactics employed by Glazer in bringing this story to the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, we have so many 100s to read.
We should pick like at least two of them.
Yeah. So I could pick one and you can pick one if you want. You know, Slate says The Zone of Interest is a movie about what you don't see and what you're forced to imagine.
Also very terrifying.
Yes. Yeah. Which is why the sound is so good. Polygon 100 says, by taking away the spectacle of violence, Glazer's film shows another side of one of history's greatest atrocities. The scale of the human catastrophe sets it in not because it's represented, but because the characters don't seem to notice it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. They have become numb to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is honestly such a stark contrast to Oppenheimer and the kind of realistic depiction of the Americans and non-Americans who were involved in the creation of the bomb. Because in a way there is that level of them kind of trying to not think about it too much and think about all the death, but then they actually have to face it. And that's part of their non-hatred of the people that they killed, right?
Yeah.
So. Any 100s you want to read?
I'm going to read From Consequence.
Do it!
Grounded and yet also experimental, cold at some points and intimate at others, The Zone of Interest is one of the year's most deliberately challenging films, unafraid to explore one of humanity's darkest moments from some unexpected angles.
Mm.
Very true. Thank you, Liz.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's it. It was very good. So we have watched all of the Oscar-nominated films, and we, in the next episode, will reveal our Oscar picks.
Yes. Oh my gosh, this is going to be so hard.
Ooh, I know.
I honestly hate doing our theories because I just get so biased. I just want what I want to win.
Yep.
Okay. Oh man, this was such a good movie. If you guys can handle it, definitely watch it. It's quite horrifying. All right, is that all we have to say about The Zone of Interest?
Yeah.
Okay. I need to lay down after this episode.
I know.
Oh, man. Okay. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and IMDb. We are also on Amazon Music, Spotify, and Acast. If you want to email us, please do that at allbythepopcornpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow our social media. We have Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search All By The Popcorn or All By The Popcorn Podcast. And we have merch, so please check that out. But thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you in our Oscar Theories podcast.
Yes.
Woo. Goodbye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.